Welcome to Minnesota Mixtape, a weekly spotlight on the Minnesota music scene. I'm your host, Malachi Coons. Have you heard of groups like the Velquins or the Valdons, Twa Corbies, maybe the Gestures? Towards the end of today's show, we're going to visit some obscure pieces of Minnesota music history. Before that, songs from Bijaki, Sarah Morris, Paul Spring, Megan and the Birdwatcher, and a new Duluth band called Pete Boggs. It's Minnesota Mixtape, made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and produced at KAXE, an independent and people-powered community radio station broadcasting from the north bank of the Mississippi River. We'll begin today with Teague Alexi and a song that references that very same river. Here's Old John Doe.
vagrants come. All I gotta wait for is a moment, sure wondering why. I got a time on the scroll. The little words you said are set like the western sky. Don't let it be so damn clear. We'll find our love like the wheel. Let it be like trust in the morning light. Start your day on right where you left the last one for the drives again. Nights for escaping through screen.
It's a new Duluth band called Pete Boggs, who blend jazz, folk, and psychedelia, and just released that laid-back single, Setting In. How often do you get pedal steel and saxophone in the same band? You are listening to Minnesota Mixtape. When the love is infinite, I'm into it. Here's the title track from Kiss the Tiger's latest, Infinite Love.
Lately I can see myself, forehead pressed against a greyhound window. don't make a scar. A sweet goodbye from my favorite pen, or I pack my things while you sit on the bed. A final chance to say what needs to be said. There's one cause a lesser wound. Well, that's the one I choose. Lately I can see myself one seat removed from an airplane window, stuck in between two strangers, while the flight attendant saw the dangers of a journey through the clouds. Still I feel lighter than I do now. We reach the blue and I look around and wonder. Which would you prefer? No need to worry, I just had to ask. I'm pretty certain it won't come to pass. To reassure us both, I take your hand and turn my face to you. There's the one, there's the one, yeah, there's the one I choose.
Sarah Morris has a new album on the way this fall called Say Yes, again working with her top-notch band of Lars Eric Larsen, Nick Salisbury, Haley E. Rydell, and Dave Mayling. That was The One I Choose here on Minnesota Mixtape. We're stepping away. Stay tuned for more Minnesota music.
Pam Perry from Brainerd is a regular contributor to the KAXE Morning Show. She talks about birds and other wildlife. We asked her why she supports this station.
So, and now the most recent thing is the newsroom. And I love the news reports. You're not hearing that anywhere else. You're not hearing about what county boards are doing and local governments. This is the place. This is where you're going to hear about it. And the music was wonderful. You know, and you had your volunteer hosts. And again, local people often, I want to support it. I want to support something. And then, of course, when I was listening, I was going, where else do you hear about bud break and plants and birds and forestry and all the things that, you know, were northern Minnesota?
You can become a member like Pam Perry. Give now at KAXE.org.
In the past, we knew more about our neighbors. I'm Heidi Holton, and KEXC provides that. We get to know the people that live in northern Minnesota, like Kathy Davies on What's for Breakfast.
Well, truly, every day I wake up with you guys, and so there's socialization. And I love the local news. That interview with Amy Klobuchar this morning was wonderful. I am so supportive of finding out what's going on with all the tribal stations, and I care about the Canadian wildfires. I love to hear about everything that's local. You know, I've been to Riverfest, and that was fantastic. I listen to and support KAXC because you guys are what it's all about up here.
When you donate to KEXC, you're supporting your local community. Help us out now during this crisis of the defunding of public media from the federal government. Thank you for being there for KEXC. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
Good afternoon. Thanks for listening to Minnesota Mixtape on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr. Support comes from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleranebank.com, member FDIC. Now a message from the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there is 988 with support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help when you need someone to talk to, call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. Coming up at 4 o'clock, Greg Tix is your volunteer host for On the River, a great mix of music. And 7 o'clock tonight, Mike Berry, your volunteer host for Green Cheese Trivia. Right now, we return to Minnesota Mixtape. Thank you for listening to People Powered KAXC and Minnesota Mixtape. Good afternoon, I'm Jennifer Barr. Hooking up a car seat, it can be tricky. Are you positive your child's car seat is installed correctly? Now is the time to be overprotective, drive smart, and get your precious cargo home safely. A message from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Thank you to our members for helping make KAXC possible. And if you are at least 70 and a half years old, supporting KAXC's future is easy. You can ask your financial advisor to set up charitable IRA distributions to KAXC. If you have questions, call Chris during business hours, 218-326-1234. Some live music tonight. Rich Matson and the North Stars are playing with Tim Saxhog at Rapids Brewing in Grand Rapids starting at 7. And tomorrow, Rachel Kilgore is at the Delbacca Farm in Floodwood at 3 o'clock. And they are serving apple crisp to raise money for KAXC. Good morning. It is just before 5 o'clock. You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at kaxe.org. Coming up next, it is Milk Street Radio, 6 o'clock on the media, and at 7, Weekend Edition from National Public Radio. Our weather today, sunny with highs in the upper 60s to low 70s, breezy northwest winds 10 to 20. Our lows tonight, 43 to 50, and tomorrow, sunny, highs in the mid to upper 70s. Looking ahead to Monday, sunny and warm with highs 77 to 81. I'm Jennifer Barr. You can answer our question of the week. Where do you like to go to look at fall colors? Text us 218-326-1234. And you can read some of our listener responses at kaxe.org.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week, we're finding out the new rules for dining out. How do you split the bill? What's the best way to send back a dish? And is it ever okay to have your phone on the table?
If you wouldn't take a book out to read, would you also take out your phone?
How to be a good diner? That's coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX. I'm Christopher Kimball, and this is Milk Street Radio. Today we ask, what are the rules for dining out? For example, is it ever okay to take out your phone?
If you wouldn't take a book out to read, would you also take out your phone?
And what's the best way to grab your server's attention?
I am shocked by how many people who work in restaurants who have told me they get snapped at, shouted at.
And how fussy is too fussy?
I had a woman reach out to me and she said, "We used to go out to eat all the time with this couple, but one of them was so persnickety. You know, it was like changing absolutely everything. Every cocktail had to be totally bespoke to their specs, all this stuff, right? And it's to the point where they don't want to go out with this person, and it's like their friendship is kind of faded because of it."
The new rules of restaurant etiquette, that's coming up next on Milk Street Radio from PRX after the news.
I'm Heidi Holton. We're excited at KEXE to be bringing you more jazz programming with our volunteer, Paul Kivi, the history of jazz.
Well, I think this is some of the finest music ever made, and it's kind of gotten lost across time. I pick the songs that I love, and there's lots of them, and there's lots to love. The popular music in the late 20s and 30s, especially the 30s and 40s with the big band era, that was jazz. That was the one period of time when jazz was popular music. And so you're going to hear a lot of things that are easy to get into. If you develop a taste for it, then the stuff that happens starting with Charlie Parker in the late 1940s makes sense.
Hear the history of jazz on KAXE with Paul Kivi, Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 4.
This is Milk Street Radio from PRX, and I'm your host, Christopher Kimball. Today we ask, what are the rules for dining out?
This is the funny thing, isn't it, about going out to eat, is like our human behavior is on display in a semi-public place.
Is it ever okay to have your phone on the table?
You know, because it's like, oh, you're most important to me, unless something more interesting happens on my phone.
There are also situations that are real minefields, like tipping.
What are you going to leave? Let's coordinate the tip here.
Why?
Well, when you split the check, we both have the exact same bill. So why don't we leave the same thing so one of us doesn't look like an idiot?
We're favored nations all of a sudden for lunch?
How to be a good diner, that's coming up later in the show. But first, we're joined by Irene Yu. She's the co-owner of Orion Bar in Brooklyn, also author of Soju Party, How to Drink and Eat Like a Korean. Irene, welcome to Milk Street.
Thank you so much for having me.
I should have had a bunch of soju and other things with me because we could have actually drunk our way through the interview, which would have been a lot more fun. So this is a kind of drinking I'm not familiar with. It has lots of options, lots of parts to it. So let's start at the beginning, which is, what is soju?
Yeah, so soju is a Korean distilled liquor. There's kind of two different types of soju. The one you see most commonly commercially comes in these like green or now sometimes like blue or like clear bottles. And it kind of drinks like, I would say, a very light vodka. Traditionally, soju was a distilled liquor that was made with like rice and nuruk, which is a Korean fermentation starter, and water. But the commercialized version of soju that you see in these green bottles is actually like the government has like one company that makes ethanol that they provide to all the different soju companies. And then that ethanol is cut down with like water and like flavorings and additives to sort of get their like special recipe. So making the soju itself is very cheap. The bottle, creating these like green glass bottles, accounts for a lot of the manufacturing cost. And in Korea, they have a really robust recycling program. So all of these bottles are collected and reused to produce and sell more soju.
Okay, let's talk about, I love this part, the rules around drinking. Let's talk about pouring drinks. That has a certain ritual to it, right?
Yes. So the hierarchy around Korean drinking really stems from the hierarchy that exists in Korea. Like, we're really cognizant of respecting the hierarchy of the people around us, whether that's respecting our elders, respecting people older than us, or even within like a corporate setting. So there's this concept of making sure you're serving the people who are older than you or higher above you first. So there's a lot of like, you have to feel out, is this person older than me? Or we just explicitly ask as well. So I think that's what's really interesting is that you start in this really like rigid, I'm pouring for you and then you pour for me. You never pour your own drink. And then maybe as the night goes on, you sort of like start to break down those barriers.
Yeah, I found that really interesting. You never pour your own drink. Is that because hospitality rules sort of state that other people should pour for you?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of like, don't drink by yourself, we'll drink with you. But then also like, you know, I'll serve you, you serve me. It's very much a reciprocal thing.
So then you talk about going out for the evening and you say, I know I'm strapping in for multiple rounds. So you move locations as you go on, you know, it's a little nomadic, right?
Definitely. I think it's fun because it offers a change of scene and also it sort of implicitly offers an exit strategy.
So the places you go to, are these places really designed for small plates of food and drinking, almost like tapas, or what places are you going to?
I think it's actually a little bit the other way around in Korea. In Korea, alcohol is so cheap that most of the restaurants and places that serve alcohol are making their money off food. And in Korea, it's all about big portions, about sharing. So you go to a restaurant and the idea is that like the food is first and then the alcohol sort of comes around it. So with Korean-style drinking, you're almost never drinking without there being food present.
So if you said, hey, let's go to Seoul and spend a week eating and drinking, what are three or four things you'd tell me, things not to do or things to do to sort of make sure I don't make a complete ass of myself when I'm in Korea?
Well, I will say that, you know, in this book, I talk a lot about like rituals and rules. And, you know, I think it is more like in fun. But I would say that if you stepped right off the plane, the first place you should go is the Korean convenience store, because that is where you will find everything you need to drink Korean style. So obviously you'll find your soju. So you got like the range of snacks and ramens and foods that you can eat alongside your drinking is all there. But then most importantly, they have these like hangover cures. So there's like jellies and tinctures and bottles and so many.
The hangover aisle.
Yeah. They're everywhere. So that I think is the most key thing.
Is there a particular recipe or hangover cure, you know, you might make yourself, you're not buying something in the store?
Absolutely. In Korean culture, the hangover soup is so important that there is actually a dish called hangover soup. It's called haejanggukk, And it basically contains all of the things you need to recharge and revitalize your immune system. It has like soybean sprouts. It has like Napa cabbage. It's a little bit spicy. It's a very like restorative thing to sort of help you sweat out all the alcohol.
So what are some of the cocktails or the way they mix these alcohols? You talk about a few of them.
Yeah, my favorite is called a milky shot. It's basically equal parts soju, beer, and cider, which is like a Korean Sprite. And then you mix that in a glass and you cover it with a napkin and then you like slam it on your hand to like foam it up. And then if you shoot that, it tastes like this Korean yogurt soda. And then there's other combinations like the soju beer combo, which is called homaek. There's also a shot called gojingam leju, which translates to like you had a hard day and with something sweet. So in a glass, you build like half a shot of soju, half a shot of cola, and then you fill it with beer and then you shoot the whole thing. So when you drink it, you taste the soju first and then the beer, and then it ends with like that syrupiness from the Coke.
So you're co-owner of Orion Bar in Brooklyn. Are there certain things you serve at the bar that are particularly popular, especially Korean drinks that really stand out?
One of our top sellers ever since we've opened is actually also a drink in the book. It's our Space Spam. It's like a spam cocktail. And so it bridges this gap between like my Korean upbringing in America. So I was like, oh, wouldn't it be really cool to like have a drink that tastes like spam? And it tried really, really hard to do that. And it did not work because like fat washing spam doesn't really do anything. And I don't know, it just like didn't really work to translate spam into a drink. So instead went more with like a tiki cocktail that's inspired by the ethos of spam, I guess. So it's a little bit spicy. It's a little bit smoky. And then this at the bar, we serve frozen in a plastic spam can. So that's been very, of course. So that's been very popular.
And what is it called?
Space Spam.
Space Spam. So I'm listening to this now. I'm intrigued. Give me a couple of ideas. So I go to the liquor store and I'm going to come home and try to make a couple of different cocktails, Korean style. What would be a couple of simple recipes I might want to make?
My favorite recipes that I really recommend from the book is to try making infused soju and using that as a basis for classic cocktails, like making a jujube soju and then using that for the base of like my jujube ginseng Negroni. You know, in the book and in this talk, we've talked a lot about like Korean style drinking, but I think that there's very much a place for soju to live on your liquor shelf and play a role in making sort of a lot more like American-style cocktails.
Irene, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much. It's really, it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Chris. It was lovely to talk to you.
That was Irene Yu. Her new book is called Soju Party. Now I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Moulton, to answer a few of your cooking questions. Sarah is, of course, the star of Sarah's Weeknight Meals on Public Television. Her latest book is Home Cooking 101. So, Sarah, later in the show, we have a segment about restaurant etiquette, what not to do in a restaurant. So I thought, since you've worked in restaurants, both as a wait person and as a chef, is there some behavior that you find is beyond the pale in terms of etiquette?
You know, I'm very old-fashioned in this way. I'm tired of the cell phone at the table. This is true for home, too. You know, having it out, checking it constantly, looking at it rather than talking to each other. It's almost like there's somebody else at the table besides the people at the table. So that drives me bananas. How about you?
That does really bother me. But I the thing that really bothers me the most, and is totally unforgivable, if someone mistreats a server.
Yeah.
I just have no patience for that.
I agree. Having had been at the receiving end of a lot of BS when I was a waitress, I couldn't agree with you more.
So how did you deal with someone who was out of control? Did you have a way of dealing with them?
You know, I'm of the kill them with kindness, or just show them with your response, how they're ridiculous. I never spit at anybody's anything.
But you thought about pouring the coffee over the head.
Oh, yeah, I thought it. But once you've waited on tables, you always have that mentality that you really care for the staff. And also, we all tip really well.
It's a brutal job.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, let's take some calls.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
This is Penny Kider.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Charlottesville, Virginia.
Well, welcome. How can we help you?
Okay. My question was, what kind of roast beef would my mom have cooked so beautifully when I was growing up? We couldn't afford, you know, really expensive cuts of meat. She's 99, and I asked her, and she doesn't remember exactly how she cooked roast beef. But I remember, I think, that she braised it in a pan, maybe on the stovetop, and then put it in the oven. And to me, it came out so beautifully. Maybe it's because I'm trying to shortcut and not braise it and waste a pan, put it in another one in the oven. But I'm wondering if you all have some secrets.
Are we talking about roast beef, or are we talking about pot roast? Because roast beef, you don't braise.
See, I don't like pot roast because it's too done. But I remember her cutting it, you know, in slices.
When you use the term braise, was there liquid involved?
No, just salt and pepper and braising the all sides or browning it.
Browning. You mean roast beef, the old-fashioned roast beef.
I'm looking at the Betty Crocker cookbook. And I think she had a rump roast.
Rump roast makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So you can do the reverse sear. And the point of the reverse sear is when you cook it at 250. You know how a lot of times, you know, right next to the crust, it'll be very, very well done all around until you get to the very center. And only that part is really the temperature you wanted it to be, unless you're a well-done fan.
Uh-huh.
When you do the reverse sear, the whole thing from top to bottom is the temperature you want it to be. And you have to decide what that temperature is, taking into account carryover cooking time. So you cook it to that temperature. When it's reached that temperature, and you really should get a meat thermometer, they're not that expensive.
Yeah.
And then you take it out and you sear it in the end, and it's yummy.
Most roast beef is made from the round, which is the hip down.
Uh-huh.
And that's very lean meat. And so it has to be cooked rare or medium rare. Because if you cook it any more, it'll just be totally unpalatable. And you have to slice it really thin. I think the first thing is, what cut are you going to use? I would probably get a roast out of the short loin. There's the chuck from the front of the animal, the chuck, the ribs, the loin, the short loin. The short loin's between the round and the loin. Then you have two choices. You can brown it on top of the stove to start.
Uh-huh.
And you can use some spices and salt and other things. Put it in a low oven until it comes up to 120, maybe, on the inside.
Okay.
And then take it out and let it sit. It will come up. It's 4 or 5 pound roast, probably. It'll gain 5 degrees. So maybe you cook it to 115 to 120. The other choice is what Sarah said, which is start in a low oven, take it out when it's almost ready, and then finish it in a very hot oven, or you can finish it on top of the stove, which is a little messier. But the key to all of this is the cut. The short loin is a better shot.